Good afternoon. It's 12:06 and this is 89.1 FM WBOY Fort Wayne, and it's time for Health 360 Midday Matters. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and I hope that you join today's conversation by giving us a phone call at 1-800-471-9264. You can always email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post right on our Midday Matters Facebook page. In the studio with me is my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman.
Thank you, Sarah. Today we will be discussing the highs and lows of thyroid disease with Dr. Mel Karas, endocrinologist with the Lutheran Medical Group. Welcome, Dr. Karas.
Thank you, Dr. Rothman. It's a pleasure to be here today, and it's a good thing you called me somewhat in advance, because as beautiful as it is out there, you may not have found me today.
Wonderful. The thyroid gland is a small butterfly-shaped gland inside the anterior neck that plays an extremely important role in controlling our body's metabolism by producing thyroid hormones that influence virtually every organ system. Overactive and underactive thyroid function disorders are not uncommon in our population, and thyroid cancer will be newly diagnosed this year in approximately 45,000 women and 15,000 men. Although it is the eighth most prevalent cancer, thyroid cancer is very effectively treated and generally has an excellent prognosis, ranking only 14th in deaths caused by cancer in the United States, with 1,800 deaths per year. Thyroid cancer is, however, increasing in prevalence. Dr. Karas will review with us today the causes, symptoms, and treatments of hyper- and hypothyroidism, autoimmune thyroid disease, thyroid cancer, and the importance of adequate iodine in our diets to ensure not only normal thyroid function, but also normal mental and physical development in infants and children throughout the world. Dr. Karas, what is the function of the thyroid gland, and how does it control our body's metabolism?
The function of the thyroid gland is essentially to make thyroid hormone. It does this through the use of iodine, which is taken inside the thyroid gland, and through several enzyme actions is converted to thyroid hormone. The two main thyroid hormones are T4 and T3. And the thyroid gland controls metabolism through the secretion, as needed, of the T4 predominantly, and T3 is a lesser amount is secreted by the thyroid gland, and the predominant T3 comes from conversion in the tissues of T4 to T3. How it monitors it, whether how much to put out or how little to put out, is controlled by the pituitary gland, which makes thyroid-stimulating hormone. The old adage during my fellowship was, the average pituitary is smarter than the average doc. So the TSH stimulates the thyroid gland. The thyroid gland puts out thyroid hormone, which then feeds back to the pituitary gland and tells the pituitary whether to make more or less TSH, thyroid-stimulating hormone.
And the metabolic functions, the effect of the thyroid hormones on what functions of our body?
The thyroid hormone is found in every organ system, body tissues. It is responsible for contractility of the heart, normal contraction of the heart, proper water excretion through the kidneys. It's involved in everything. For being such a small gland, it has a lot of beneficial effects, obviously, throughout the body, as well as central nervous system development as a child, and cognitive function if anyone's deficient as an adult as well.
So basic functions that we take for granted, like heart rate or blood pressure or body temperature or weight gain, are apparently controlled by the thyroid hormones. The you just mentioned now, and a very important point, the importance of adequate iodine to ensure proper thyroid function in pregnant and lactating women, and the effect that a deficiency might have on the developing fetus and the infant.
Yes, that's an excellent point to bring up. Back in the 1960s, the World Health Organization targeted about 135 to 140 countries that were iodine deficient. Mm-hmm. Through a quite aggressive program, through iodized salt and recognition of foods that do have iodine, they are, have now got it down to about 20 to 25 countries throughout the world are considered iodine deficient. The significance of iodine deficiency is, number one, cognitive function, normal central nervous system development in the fetus, proper function of our different organ systems. It's especially important that women that are pregnant get enough iodine in their diet or supplements as far as prenatal vitamins for normal thyroid function and also for normal fetal growth.
Development there. And they, you know, while we don't have the extreme problems in underdeveloped countries, it's been shown that even in our country, if a mother is significantly hypothyroid, the baby's IQ might be affected. So it's really important that they be aware of what they're eating and what's in their prenatal vitamins.
Yes, and it's been found that there are areas in the United States that are iodine deficient. Mm-hmm. And you can't always assume that prenatal vitamins have iodine in them. And not all salt is iodized. It's not FDA mandated that salt be iodized. So the average woman needs about 150 micrograms a day of iodine during pregnancy. If she's lactating, breastfeeding, she needs at least 200 to 250 micrograms a day of iodine. So you can see it it can lead to problems down the road, and it has to be looked for as well. One of the nice things about iodine is it's very efficiently absorbed by the body. Probably around 90-95% of iodine taken in our diet is absorbed. So a nice test to check for iodine deficiency is to do a random urine iodine measurement, which is a random urine sample. And that has worked out very well in diagnosing iodine deficiency.
And with hypothyroidism, what are the symptoms of hypothyroidism and then obviously hyperthyroidism?
There are many symptoms for hyperthyroidism and hypothyroidism. The problem is that they're not all specific to the thyroid gland. Hypothyroidism, the classic symptom is cold intolerance. They can also have muscle weakness, muscle cramps, proximal muscle weakness. Women may notice that their menstrual periods are much heavier than they used to be. Profound hypothyroidism can also lead to women developing galactorrhea, breast milk production and discharge. Hyperthyroidism is pretty much the opposite of hypothyroidism. They have heat intolerance. That's the most reliable symptom for hyperthyroidism. Now, there are others, tremors, palpitations because of a rapid heart rate. They are conscious of their heart beating, proximal muscle weakness, anxiety, nervousness, insomnia. If you look at each individual symptom, it's not specific for the thyroid, but you put all those symptoms together and you can usually come up with a diagnosis.
And is there are there genetic aspects or familial aspects to these diseases?
Yes, there are. Hypothyroidism, the most common cause for that is a condition called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Another name for that is chronic lymphocytic thyroiditis. And in this condition, the patient's immune system makes antibodies that are directed towards thyroid peroxidase enzyme. And that enzyme is necessary to produce thyroid hormone. It does run in families. It's much more common among women. And I've seen many families where the grandmother had hypothyroidism, the mother has hypothyroidism, and then their daughters have hypothyroidism as well. And that's pretty textbook for Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
And just for our listening audience, hypo means underactive, and hyper means overactive thyroid. How is this? Are these conditions diagnosed, and how are they treated?
Very good question. As I mentioned, the number one cause for hypothyroidism is Hashimoto's, and the one blood test that we can check is called TPO, thyroid peroxidase antibodies. Who would I check that in? Usually, it would be somebody that has a strong family history of hypothyroidism. Sometimes patients will have a thyroid ultrasound done for different reasons. And there's a very typical pattern to the shape and what the thyroid looks like. It almost looks like, I used the word cobblestone appearance. That's very classic for Hashimoto's. So then we check a thyroid peroxidase antibodies, and if they're positive, then we will check a TSH, the TSH being the most reliable test for hypothyroidism and hyperthyroidism. The treatment is thyroid hormone for Hashimoto's thyroiditis if they're hypothyroid at that time, and there's different preparations of thyroid hormone that a patient can be treated with.
And the usual one in our society is levothyroxine, but there are some differences. Could you mention that?
Sure. What we use predominantly in the United States is a synthetic form of T4, and that is called levothyroxine. That is the generic brand, or type, I should say. We also have synthetic T4 in brand names of Synthroid and Levoxyl. And we also have preparation that contains both T4 and T3, which is considered more natural, and it comes from beef, pork, thyroid glands.
And that's the Armour?
Armour, that's correct.
Armour brand. And then we get into hyperthyroidism, which is an overactive thyroid. What are the causes of that? Again, is it familial? And here we have some pretty severe consequences,
yes,
if not treated properly.
The most common cause of hyperthyroidism, as far as a disease or a condition, is Graves' disease. That is also autoimmune, where the body makes antibodies that stimulate the thyroid hormone receptors, and the thyroid becomes overactive. One of the ones types of hyperthyroidism that can be often overlooked is iatrogenic. We put people on too much thyroid hormone sometimes, and if there's not adequate follow-up and surveillance of the thyroid hormone tests, we can miss it. Graves' disease, which as I mentioned is autoimmune, does tend to run in families, or if they don't have a family history of Graves' disease, if you research far enough in the family history, you'll find that there may be some other autoimmune conditions that the family has that could tip you off.
Now that's a fascinating point. It's been made that often people with autoimmune thyroiditis have other types of autoimmune diseases.
That's correct.
You mentioned the big one would be?
Well, there's several. Addison's disease is an autoimmune condition. Addison's disease is a condition where the patient does not make enough cortisone by the adrenal glands. The vast majority of those are autoimmune. We also have B12 deficiency, which can be an autoimmune condition where the body makes antibodies against the protein that helps absorb B12, and that protein is an intrinsic factor. We also have an autoimmune situation in vitiligo, is felt to be autoimmune.
Lack of skin pigmentation.
Yes, yes.
And then diabetes.
And diabetes, type 1 diabetes, yeah. The most obvious one. Yeah. And that's the one that we think of as in younger people, and it's autoimmune. The body makes antibodies directed against the insulin-producing cells of the pancreas.
So that even though it's been said that much of the thyroid disease is older people, you feel that like in juvenile diabetics or younger people with diabetes, this thyroid disease Well, Graves' disease may pop up?
Yes, it may. I have many patients that have type 1 diabetes mellitus, and when you check the antibodies, they have the antibodies directed towards, let's say, the adrenal gland. They also have the thyroid peroxidase antibodies as well. They may not be hypothyroid, but they do have evidence of the condition of Hashimoto's because of the antibodies being present. So what we do in that situation is, first of all, be aware that they are predisposed to becoming hypothyroid, and check periodic TSH values. As I mentioned before, the TSH is the regulatory hormone produced by the pituitary gland and the most efficient and most reliable hormone to measure.
So I want to remind our listeners that this is Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY. And if you have a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you. The number to call is 1-800-471-9264. You can always post on our Midday Matters Facebook page. It's Midday Matters. Or you can email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm. We actually need to take a short break. But during that break, if you have a question or a comment, do give us a call. 1-800-471-9264. Or you can post online at Midday Matters on our Facebook page. The time is 12:23, and this is 89.1 FM.
When filmmaker and actor Sarah Polley was growing up, her family would joke,
"I didn't look much like my father. My dad probably wasn't my real dad."
Polly was 11 when her mother died with a secret. Years later, Polly went looking for the real story of her mother's life and in the process discovered her father wasn't her father. On the next Fresh Air, Polly talks about her documentary, Stories We Tell. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Over the years, we've talked many times with journalist and author Chris Hedges, who may be best known for his book, War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning. I'm Neil Conan. As part of our series, Looking Ahead, Chris Hedges joins us to talk about politics and poverty, progressive causes, and what he sees for the future of America. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Cameron Memorial Community Hospital, providing health and wellness services in the spirit of charity, concern, and excellence, serving Steuben County and surrounding areas. Information at CameronMCH.com. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Jobs may change. Retirement dreams don't have to. More information on Reinbold and Anderson on the web at reinboldandanderson.com.
Welcome back to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY 89.1 FM. The time is 12:25, and if you have a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-471-9264. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. We're devoting this whole hour to the thyroid, and if you have a question or comment about it, we'd love to hear from you. We have Alan on line one with a question. Alan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just had a question. Could you explain Cushing's disease to me? Is this anything related to what you're talking about?
That is an overproduction of cortisone, usually due to a pituitary tumor that stimulates the adrenal glands to make too much cortisone. The usual cause is, as I mentioned, a pituitary tumor. But as far as being an autoimmune condition or related to the thyroid gland, it doesn't fit that pattern.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Alan.
Getting back to where we were, Dr. Karas, the interpretation of the TSH, the thyroid stimulating hormone that comes from the pituitary, and the T4 test, how are these interpreted in terms of the feedback mechanisms in deciding whether someone is hypo, underactive, or hyper, overactive in their thyroid functioning?
That's a very good point that I think our audience needs to be aware of, and it can get misinterpreted at times. As I mentioned earlier, the pituitary gland makes TSH among other hormones. The TSH is involved in the stimulation of normal thyroid hormone production. And that feeds back. The thyroid hormone levels in the body feed back to the pituitary, and the pituitary senses if there's too much, too little. The TSH will go up if the thyroid hormone levels are low. In other words, the pituitary recognizes that there's not enough thyroid hormone around, and it wants to make more TSH to stimulate the thyroid gland to make more thyroid hormone. In the case of hyperthyroidism, the pituitary senses that there's too much thyroid hormone, and it says, whoa, I need to shut off. I need to make less TSH because there's more than enough available in the body. So it's not uncommon, and it's usually the case, that the TSH is totally suppressed, unmeasurable. And that is very, very classic for hyperthyroidism. So the most reliable test in general, assuming that the pituitary gland is normal, is the TSH measurement. And we usually get a free T4 as well.
There's been some issues in our society about the possibly overuse of the thyroid hormone and TSH blood tests. Should people with a family history of thyroid disease, people over 35, since thyroid issues seem to come on at a later age, other than congenital hypothyroidism, which we talked about earlier, people with radiation exposure in their past, have regular thyroid screening to detect thyroid abnormalities in their early stages? And are these tests necessary or perhaps sometimes overused in the evaluation of overweight children and adults?
To answer the last question first, I do believe that thyroid function tests are probably over-ordered due to weight gain. That seems to be a misconception in society that an underactive thyroid gland looking for a high TSH leads to obesity, and it does not. But it is a very, very delicate topic, and it's hard to really break that myth. Now, as far as who should be checked for thyroid conditions, number one, if they walk in with the classic symptoms of hypothyroidism, feeling cold, muscle aches, muscle weakness, really dry skin, dry, unmanageable hair, puffiness in the face. Obviously, you would want to check the thyroid function test in that patient. Also, if a patient has a strong family history of a thyroid disorder, in the case of family history of hypothyroidism, an underactive thyroid, you would want to check at least a baseline thyroid function test. Pretty much the TSH is reliable. And you may want to order the thyroid peroxidase antibodies that I mentioned involved in autoimmune thyroid disease. As in the case of hyperthyroidism, they're much easier to discern because they have an exaggerated symptoms of nervousness, fast heart rate, palpitations where the patient is conscious of their heart beating quite rapidly. In this case, people do tend to lose weight, but it tends to be muscle mass. So it's an abnormal weight loss. They may also notice, which is one of the classic symptoms of being hot all the time, nervous, anxious, irritable.
And sometimes misdiagnosed with psychiatric disease when they actually have thyroid disease.
That happens quite commonly. But also the flip side occurs also that they want to blame the thyroid when in fact they do have some psychological or psychiatric components.
We have some folks to get to on the line, and it's some folks who have also wrote into us, and we'll get to everyone. But first, let's head to the phones with Mark. Mark, welcome to Health 360.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have had rheumatoid arthritis, an autoimmune system disorder, for over 40 years. Runs in my family. I also have been diagnosed recently with hypothyroidism, but that's after also having type 2 diabetes for about 12 or 15 years. I heard you mention something about with the hypothyroidism that runs in my family that it may have some type of autoimmune disorder characteristics. And the other part of my comment or question would be, how is it I can let others in my family who also have the rheumatoid arthritis situation and have just come in with the diabetes, what do I say to them? Do I encourage them to keep an eye on their thyroid or tell them to go have it checked right now? Or what do I say? It appears, at least in my case, that when my pancreas stopped producing insulin, somewhere down the road, it caused both my thyroid to slow down or stop producing, and the same thing with production of testosterone.
Okay.
Both of those.
We're going to give Dr. Akaris a chance to answer some of those questions. Mark, thank you so much for calling in with them. Dr. Akaris.
Yes. Hi, Mark. Thank you very much for that question. It's a very good one. First of all, as you know, rheumatoid arthritis tends to be an autoimmune condition. So it's not unusual to see other autoimmune conditions, and you mentioned hypothyroidism. One test to check for, which is, once again, the thyroid peroxidase antibodies, measure the autoimmunity of your body to make antibodies to the thyroid. You mentioned who should you tell or should you tell your family members. If you do have the antibodies, I think it would be very wise to let your family members know that you have this condition, because they may have it as well. And I would recommend baseline thyroid function tests. In other words, get those initial thyroid tests done to see if the thyroid is functioning normally at that time. One of the other things that we do know is that hypothyroidism, underactivity of the thyroid gland, is increased in people with diabetes mellitus. And I'm referring to type 2 diabetes mellitus as well. It's also more common as we age. It's not unusual for some people over the age of 65 to be hypothyroid. And it's a fairly large percentage that do get hypothyroidism over the age of 65.
So we would encourage Mark's family to go get tested.
Absolutely.
Sooner than later.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mark, again for your call. We also have Linda on the line. Linda, thanks for your patience and welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Doctor, 80% of my immediate family, my husband, myself, two of our three daughters, have thyroid issues. So it obviously has run in both sides of our family. Can you explain this antibody business again? One of my daughters was just recently tested and had over a count of over 1,000 antibodies. What exactly, how would you interpret that?
Well, if they had measured the thyroid peroxidase antibodies, that would be consistent with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which leads to hypothyroidism. As far as the level of the antibodies, it can be different for everybody, and they don't tend to go down over the course of time. It's a special testing that is done in the lab to come up with a concentration or the degree of of antibodies that are being produced at that point in time. So the fact that they're present, first and foremost, tips everybody off that your daughter would be predisposed to hypothyroidism.
And the treatment for the Hashimoto's is?
Once the thyroid becomes underactive, thyroid hormone replacement.
Okay, we need to, Linda, thank you so much for your call. We need to take a quick break for the news here on Midday Matters on 89.1 FM, but we'll be back in just a few moments. In the meantime, if you do have a question or comment, you can give us a call at 1-800-471-9264. We do have a couple of questions that we're going to get to that were written into us, so stay tuned for that. It's 1237, and this is 89.1 FM WBOI.
Paul Monty's son Jared was killed in Afghanistan. Now he drives his son's truck, and he unknowingly inspired a hit country song.
It was the same thing. It was the change in the ashtray and the bottle rolling on the floor. I couldn't get through the whole song. I drive your truck.
The story behind the song later on All Things Considered from NPR News. This afternoon at 4 here on WBOI.
Good afternoon, I'm Sean Beter with WBOI News. The Indiana Bureau of Motor Vehicles says three groups whose specialty license plates were suspended last year are not getting them back anytime soon. The BMV says it has ended talks with the Indiana Greenways Foundation, the Indiana 4-H Foundation, and the Indiana Youth Group, a support group for gay teenagers. The groups lost their plates a year ago when conservative groups targeted the Indiana Youth Group and then convinced the BMV to withdraw its plates because the group violated terms by offering low-digit plates to donors and volunteers. The 4-H and Greenways Foundations also rewarded supporters with digit plates. Leaders of the three organizations say they had been hopeful they would reach an agreement with the BMV, limiting the length of the suspensions. Indiana convenience stores say they want consumers to be able to buy cold beer from their locations, and they're suing the state for that right. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, Indiana is the only state that regulates beer sales based on temperature.
50 years ago, the Indiana Alcoholic Beverage Commission decided only liquor stores could sell chilled beer. The General Assembly later codified that decision. Members of the Indiana Petroleum Marketers and Convenience Store Association point out they can sell chilled wine, but can only sell beer warm. David Bridgers is the vice president of Thornton's, which has 26 convenience stores in the state. He says the unfair practice is costing the state money.
Thornton's has not built a convenience store in Indiana since 2006 for the sole reason of its antiquated alcohol laws.
And the association says the law is anti-competitive because it allows liquor stores to sell chilled beer at higher prices. But Indiana Association of Beverage Retailers President John Livengood says the fact grocery and convenience stores can sell different types of liquor provides plenty of competition.
I mean, I've gone into gas stations in Kentucky to verify that, and I find that their cold beer prices are about the same as they are in package stores in Indiana.
The Convenience Stores Association filed its lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Indianapolis. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And Governor Mike Pence is directing flags at state facilities across Indiana be flown at half staff today in honor of Peace Officers Memorial Day. The day honors federal, state, and local officers killed or disabled in the line of duty. President Obama signed a proclamation ordering flags nationwide to be flown at half staff today. Flags should remain at half staff until sunrise tomorrow. Pence also asks businesses and residents to lower their flags to half staff to pay tribute to the men and women in law enforcement across Indiana and the nation. And let's take a quick look at the WBOI weather forecast on this Wednesday afternoon. Today, mostly sunny skies, a high near 83 degrees. West winds gusting as high today as 30 miles per hour. Overnight, partly cloudy conditions, a low around 54, and another nice day on Thursday. Mostly sunny skies and a high near 78. You're listening to Midday Matters here on WBOI.
Welcome back to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY 89.1 FM. The time is 12:41, and if you'd like to ask a question, we're talking about the thyroid today. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-471-9264. Post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and in the studio with me is my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman, as well as Dr. Karras, who is helping answer your thyroid questions today. We have a couple from the web that we're going to get to. We had one listener write in and ask if we could talk about interferon-induced thyroidism. If I said that right?
You said it absolutely correctly. That really brings up the big topic of medications in general in this day and age of polypharmacy. What medications have an effect on thyroid function? Interferon is one of them. It can lead to hypothyroidism, but it can also cause hyperthyroidism. So it can affect it in both ways, overproduction of thyroid hormone and underproduction of thyroid hormone. Other medications that we need to be aware of, number one is lithium, which is not used as much as it used to be for bipolar illness, but it is responsible for causing hypothyroidism. So it can cause your thyroid to become underactive. One medication that's used quite a bit is amiodarone. It's used predominantly only in cardiac problems, irregular heartbeats, things of that nature. Amiodarone is pretty much 75% of the medication is iodine. Now, iodine can do one of two things when it goes into a thyroid gland. It can cause it to become hypothyroid because of the big flood of rush of iodine, or it can cause people to become hyperthyroid. So that medication can cause both an overactivity of the thyroid gland and an underactivity of the thyroid gland. And we see that fairly commonly.
We have one last question I want to get to before we shift gears just a little bit here on Health 360. Julie posted on our Facebook page, she had suffered from a brain injury and how she wanted to know how brain injury and thyroid damage were connected, if they are.
That is an excellent question, and she should be commended for coming out asking this question. As I mentioned earlier, everything is fine and reliable and accurate if the pituitary gland is normal and is able to make enough TSH and do the feedback mechanism of the body. However, head trauma, especially severe head trauma, pituitary tumors can affect the ability of the pituitary gland to make different hormones that are found in the pituitary gland. One of those, as I mentioned, is TSH, thyroid-stimulating hormone. And if due to trauma, radiation treatment to the brain, or any pituitary tumors causes it to become deficient, then you've lost the stimulation to the thyroid gland to make thyroid hormone. In that case, the TSH is not reliable, and we depend on the free T4 level to monitor for over-treatment or under-treatment of their thyroid condition. That's an excellent question. The regular thyroid tests assume a normally functioning pituitary gland.
Okay, we're now going to start talking more about thyroid cancer. I remember when I was a child, there were other children getting radiation therapy for their tonsil enlargement, adenoidal enlargement, even acne. And many of these people with a history of radiation exposure in their early years went on to develop thyroid cancer. And then, of course, when we have nuclear power plant issues, where Chernobyl or the Japanese Fukushima issue, where there's radioactive iodine released into the air, we see thyroid cancer secondary to that. And then many of us in our careers have worked in laboratories with exposure to radioactivity. So this is an issue. How is this? How do you screen these people? People with a history of radiation exposure should definitely let their doctors know this and be further screened with lab tests, and you now have ultrasound,
yes,
et cetera.
Yes. There's not a good blood test to check for thyroid cancers, but we have a tool nowadays, thyroid ultrasound, which we can detect any abnormalities or growths in the thyroid gland. People that have been exposed to the radiation treatments back in the 40s, 50s for acne and adenoids and tonsils should have a thyroid ultrasound done. The big problem is that not all these thyroid cancers are palpable or can be felt at the time of an examination. So the thyroid ultrasound is a very good, sensitive, and easy test to check for any abnormalities of the thyroid gland as far as any abnormal growths. They should have a baseline thyroid ultrasound, and I recommend it be checked annually as well.
Now, we have, now it is not uncommon to have thyroid nodules, and the majority of which are benign, but some can be malignant, and again, the ultrasound might pick up the ones that can't be palpated?
That's correct. This brings up a very, very important topic of thyroid cancer. Thyroid cancer is the only cancer that has increased in incidence, believe it or not, in the past 10 years. Now, we may ask, well, why is that? The biggest reason is that we're detecting these nodules, malignant nodules, that are not able to be felt, we can pick them up quite early with the thyroid ultrasound. So I think a lot of the old adage used to be, you didn't die of thyroid cancer, you died with thyroid cancer. But now we're finding all those people that had no symptoms, no abnormalities that were able to be felt on the thyroid gland, we're picking them up now with a thyroid ultrasound, which is actually good because the earlier you detect any cancer, the better the outcome. The most common, and I'd like to comment on another condition that also can predispose people, that's a risk factor for thyroid cancer, and that's what the Graves' disease that we mentioned earlier. If they have a thyroid nodule, it needs to be measured and followed with a thyroid ultrasound and possibly a biopsy.
But people may not have symptoms and have thyroid cancer without
Absolutely.
A large nodule. So how would they get to the point of getting an ultrasound?
Well, risk factors, as we have commented on, radiation exposure. If they have a Graves' disease, a lot of times, believe it or not, people find out they have a thyroid nodule when they get a carotid ultrasound done because of the proximity of the thyroid gland to the carotid arteries. It's amazing how many times that gets picked up, and they're very small nodules.
What are the different types of thyroid cancer, and how are they treated, and what is the prognosis?
There are basically four different types of thyroid cancer. Papillary cancer, which is the most common, and that's about 85 to 90% of thyroid cancers. We also have follicular. We have medullary carcinoma of the thyroid, and we have anaplastic. The best thyroid cancers to have are the first two, papillary carcinoma and follicular carcinoma. And anaplastic thyroid cancer is the most aggressive of the thyroid cancers and very resistant to any type of treatment. The best way and the most common way that we diagnose thyroid cancers is that we find a nodule, or the patient feels a nodule, or the family doctor feels a nodule. We do an ultrasound. We find a solitary nodule. The criteria of doing a biopsy is that to do an aspiration if the nodule is over 1 centimeter in size.
And that's a needle biopsy.
Yes. It's called a fine needle aspiration, where we use a very, very small gauge needle, and we take 3 or 4 passes into the nodule and send that off to the pathology lab to be read. Bear in mind that 95% of thyroid nodules are benign. So it's the other 5% that we want to catch. And the whole procedure of diagnosing it as far as the fine needle aspiration is an outpatient procedure. It takes about 10 minutes to do it. We use an ultrasound machine to guide the needle into the nodule, and people go home right after that.
And once it's diagnosed, what are the usual treatments?
The predominant treatments for papillary cancer of the thyroid and follicular cancer of the thyroid, first of all, is thyroid surgery. Sometimes we take out the entire thyroid gland, and other times we only take the affected side, depending on the size of the thyroid cancer. Typically, if it's less than a centimeter, we can get it by with just taking out the affected lobe. After that, radioactive iodine treatment is used for thyroid cancer. Radioactive iodine only goes into thyroid tissue. So that is the way we treat papillary cancer of the thyroid and follicular cancer of the thyroid through radioactive iodine. Medullary cancer of the thyroid does not take up iodine, but it makes a hormone called calcitonin. And that is a hormone that we monitor the level to see for any metastasis or recurrence. And anaplastic is, there's nothing to really monitor. It's a very aggressive cancer.
So most patients will have surgery and the radioactive thyroid, and then they will end up taking the thyroid replacement for the rest of their lives?
That's correct. And in the case of thyroid hormone replacement, we want to put the patient on a higher than normal dose of thyroid hormone because that'll suppress or will make the TSH unmeasurable. So there's nothing there to stimulate any thyroid tissue. And the number one test that we follow is the thyroglobulin level in the body. Thyroglobulin only comes from functioning thyroid tissue. So we want to keep the TSH suppressed, and we want to make sure that the thyroglobulin level is suppressed or unmeasurable as well.
So it's extremely important for any patients who have had thyroid cancer and been treated to have routine follow-up visits, the blood tests, and they do ultrasounds too, don't they?
Yes, they do. The current recommendations are that anybody with thyroid cancer should have an annual thyroid ultrasound. You may pick up an abnormality, whether it be a recurrence or a spread in the neck, before it gets picked up on a whole body scan that we do in surveillance as well. But they should be followed on an annual basis. The thyroglobulin has to be checked on an annual basis to look for any elevation, especially if it had been suppressed in the past, because that's a tip-off that they could either have a recurrence in the neck or a metastasis to, let's say, the bone or lung.
And the papillary and follicular can reoccur.
Yes, they can.
And you mentioned something a moment ago, which is important, that a whole body scan, and I believe they use the radioactive iodine again, because
yes,
if there's thyroid cancer in distant parts of the body, it will show up on the body scan.
Yes, and this is a standard scan that we do to follow patients with thyroid cancer. We give a small dose of radioactive iodine, and it will be taken up in papillary cancer and follicular cancer in any thyroid tissue. So if we do it annually, and that's the first, can be the first tip-off that there is a recurrence. It'll be taken up. The iodine will be taken up by the thyroid tissue.
Wherever it is in the body.
That's correct.
What is the long-term prognosis for people with thyroid cancer who have been treated appropriately?
There's no reason why there shouldn't be no mortality. Nobody should die from thyroid cancer. But it's very important that people comply with taking their thyroid hormone, that they follow up with their endocrinologist or whoever's monitoring their thyroid cancer. There's also an age prognosis as well. The least aggressive and the best outcome is when between the ages of diagnosis between 20 and 45 years of age. That carries a very good prognosis.
So you've mentioned that with the papillary cancer, there's almost like 100% survival at 10 years?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I often tell people if you have to have a cancer, but you get to pick the cancer you have, papillary cancer is the one you pick. And there's no reason why there shouldn't be 100% survival rate.
So our basic message really is that if you have a family history of thyroid disease, if you have a history of radiation exposure, if you're, especially women over 60, be aware of the possibility of thyroid disease and ask to be checked. And make sure your examining physicians are examining your thyroid and feeling for nodules. Or if you feel a nodule, tell your doctor.
Absolutely. Nowadays, people are much more aware of these different types of conditions and cancers. And it's not unusual to have a patient walk in and say, I felt this in my neck, or I felt this. Is my thyroid in the front of my neck? And they say, because I felt something there. That's a tip-off. They also may also feel lymph nodes that are enlarged because maybe they have had thyroid cancer that was undiagnosed, and at the time of diagnosis, it's already spread to the neck. So we have a much more educated and well-informed society.
Mm-hmm.
And people are usually the ones
diagnosing.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
We have just about 60 seconds left in the program, Dr. Karas, but I wanted to make sure that folks who have been listening out there and want to get in touch with you, maybe to make an appointment, that you give out that information on how to do that right now.
The main phone number would be to call Lutheran Medical Group, and that number is 432-2297.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being a part of today's show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Support for Midday Matters on WBOI is provided by Parkview Ortho Hospital, offering a wide range of orthopedics treatments to help restore active lifestyles. Parkview Ortho Hospital, together with Ortho Northeastern, on the web at ortho.parkview.com. And this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Matt Rothschild Studios at 89.1 and HD Channel 1. And we're streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University, and we're supported by listeners like you. Thank you. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.